Well, we had a good discussion last week, and I invited you to come back with questions and comments. So first things, see if anybody remembers what we talked about last week. Surprise test.
I just remember it was really heavy. I think it had to do with enlightenment and meetings. It was very meaty. From no self and like really going into this whole ground fear reversal thing. It was pretty intense. But I can't really remember anymore than that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's good. Thank you very much, Molly, for reminding us. So I guess it didn't leave any... No one left with any questions that they were... Yes?
One of the statements that you made in the midst was about how our minds create the illusion that we see, positive or negative. So it made me think that I can be more aware of that and not worry as much about it, since it's really an illusion.
You should definitely be aware that it's an illusion. And you shouldn't have any of the worries that come from the assumption that things really are the way that they appear to be. And then, rather than worrying about anything, you should work on being able to use that information in the best way to guide you in your understanding and in how you lead your life. How can we go into this in more detail for your benefit?
Well, you said use that information. What information?
Well,
you refer to
the information is that things are not the way they appear to be, and that it is really your own mind that is responsible for the world that you seem to be living in and experiencing. So that's the information.
It's the positive images don't bother me so much.
Right, exactly.
But the negative, the worrisome ones, mm-hmm. It was a nice to hear that from you, because it was a good reinforcement.
Yeah.
For me to step back and say, okay, it is not me. It's not real, necessarily.
Yeah, it's the thing to realize is that your mind is creating the reality that you're living in, both the good parts and the bad parts. And that it's not something independent of your mind that's presenting a hard, unchangeable reality. It's rather, it's a reality that's being continuously constructed by your mind. So then the next question is, the obvious question is, well then, so why is my mind projecting this stuff that I don't like? As my mind is doing it, it should do what I want, right?
Something helpful.
Yeah, that's right.
Something joyous.
And you would like it to be that way, and it potentially can be.
I've heard that.
But you have to, the first question is, well, why is the mind, how is the mind doing this, and why is it doing it this particular way? And your mind is operating out of conditioning. The way it is conditioned. And it has, your mind has conditioned itself. Or you have, you know, to the extent that you're going to identify yourself with your mind, you have conditioned yourself to project this kind of reality. and you continue to do that. The reality that you experience tomorrow, next week, and next year is a result of what you do now and what you do in each succeeding moment that creates the person that you will be at that time, who projects the reality that that person is going to experience at that time. So this is the key to it, that because you, through your thoughts and your words and your speech, and most especially through the intentions, continuously create yourself, that you can take control of that process and create yourself in a much more positive way. And if the future person that is created as a result of your current behaviors is of a, for lack of a better word, let's say, of a nobler sort, then the world that that person projects will be a correspondingly better world. So now you can make this all sort of nebulous and mystical and airy-fairy. And the easiest way to do that is to you begin by assuming that nothing really exists outside of your mind. But that's not really such a productive way to go. So just think of it in terms that are really easy to understand and interpret on the basis of the kinds of people we are and the kind of culture that we're in, which is to say that we can see that, well, first of all, you look at what happens in the present moment. You look at the dynamic of how this happens. What you pay attention to in any particular moment is a huge determinant of the experience that you have, right? And we talked about that before. When I did, I used the example of, you know, two people could walk down the same street. And because they pay attention to different things, they have a totally different experience of that street. And one person could say, oh, this is the worst, ugliest street I ever saw in the world. It should be erased from the face of the earth. Somebody else could experience it as a beautiful and wonderful place that they can't wait to walk down that street again. Based on almost nothing other than what they happen to extract from that phenomenal experience in terms of what they were, what they paid attention to and what they were aware of. So that's where it begins. It's estimated that our brains receive billions of bits of information in every second. Yet, what can actually be processed by the parts of the brain that are associated with our conscious experience is somewhere between 35 and 70 bits of information per second. So, right away, all the little sense organs in your body and your eyes and your ears and everything are taking in. You could take a number like a billion and divide it by 70, and that's how many different potential realities that could be determined just by what actually comes into your consciousness.
And just a question now. So we're talking about your focal awareness, what you're paying attention to. What about all that other stuff outside of that beam of your awareness that is, being received by your nervous system and is maybe conditioning in some way or another?
Okay. Yes, we need to look at that. Okay, I'm not just talking about what's at the focus of your awareness, the part you call attention, but I'm also talking about the field of conscious awareness, all the background information that's being taken in at the same time. And that is what defines your conscious experience of the moment, the combination of attention and awareness. But beyond that, there is information that is taken in that also can have an effect. In general, you know, the information you take in unconsciously tends to have the effects it has tend to be minimal by comparison to what you take in consciously. But they do have an effect. But the effect that they're going to have is going to, once again, depend on the mind that they interact with. Okay? So, you could say in addition to, say, 35 to 70 bits out of a billion contributing to your conscious awareness, there's some other not too great number of bits that are having an effect through unconscious awareness. So that still doesn't change the basic picture, though, right? That there are all these different, in terms of the information that's being assimilated, there's this huge variety of possible interpretations in all different gradations. And of course, many of them would be fairly similar, but some of them would be dramatically different. But that's just the beginning of the story. So the filter itself, we'll call it the filter, what extracts that small set from the large set of information that constitutes your experience, that filter is the first step. But then the mind that it interacts with, this information comes in as part of your attention and your conscious awareness, and it's interpreted. How it's interpreted is based upon your cumulative past experiences, both external and internal. Do I need to expand on that, or is that kind of an obvious thing? Some specific thing that one person might regard as somehow good or desirable, another person might regard as undesirable. Obviously, that difference does not lie in the thing itself. It lies in the interpretation that is put on the thing, which is dependent upon that person's background. Right? And the extent to which this is taking place, think about the world that you live in. It's made up of identifiable, labelable objects, right? And where did you get those labels, and where did you come to associate the concepts with the particular sensory experiences that give rise to them? You weren't born with it, right? It's acquired. There's certain things that are inherent, like perception of colors and warmth and coolness and things like that. But as soon as we get to more complex objects, then it begins to depend very much on how the mind interprets it, the values that it associates with it. When we get to something as complex as other people, then it's really it's really dependent. So you can see this is not some statement that's coming out of some mysterious, mystical kind of proposition. It's just plain old common sense. You examine the nature of reality from the basis of our scientific knowledge, and we realize that every conscious entity, first of all, filters out and selects just a tiny sliver of the world, and then it interprets that tiny sliver in its own particular unique way, which we know from experience can vary enormously from one individual to another. So the net result of that is that we're all living in a world that is created by our own mind. And that's what you can affect. You see, it is the conditioning of your mind that determines how that filter is going to work. So it's not just after it's already been filtered that the conditioning takes over. The conditioning determines the selectivity of what you observe, the raw material out of which you make your reality.
So how do we become more aware of this whole process so that we can affect our conditioning, which, according to what you're saying, is going to affect our lives from this moment forward? So being able to, that awareness is really critical.
Yeah. It is. It is really critical. And keep in mind that we're conditioning ourselves in every moment. So the most effective thing that we can do is to become more aware of what's happening in every given moment. And this is the whole mindful awareness thing. I think I talked to you, was it last Thursday? I talked to you about how mindful awareness makes you aware of choices. Without mindful awareness, you act automatically on the basis of conditioning as though there were no choices or the choices were very limited. Yet the more awareness that you bring to any situation, the greater variety of choices that become apparent. So then you need some kind of standard to help guide you in the choices that you make, right? Well, where to go with this? Very simply, if you condition yourself through thoughts and intentions and speech and action that is conditioned by ignorance and greed and hatred, or substitute desire and aversion for greed and hatred, or just roll them up into one ball of wax and call them the compulsions arising out of craving. So if your conditioning arises out of ignorance and craving, then it's going to be of such a nature that it tends to create for you, it tends to cause your mind to create a reality in which there is suffering, the negative aspect. The alternative to that is to cultivate thoughts and speech and action that is rooted in the opposite of that. The opposite of ignorance is wisdom. To begin with, you have to sort of just take somebody else's word for certain aspects of wisdom. But the ignorance is the belief in the self that actually, the belief in the self and the belief in an external reality the way we perceive it, that gives rise to the craving. That is the ignorance. The craving is an inevitable and logical inescapable result of ignorance. So if you cultivate in your awareness the recognition that just simply what I'm experiencing right now isn't necessarily from its own side the way it appears to me, it's rather the result of my previous conditioning. The Buddha called that karma. So you can, you know, if you want to use that word, you can say, what I'm experiencing right now is the result of my karma. It's how I have created myself. So just being aware of that, being aware of the fact that what you have done in this moment is to inherit the results of your previous thoughts and actions and intentions. The next thing is, while you indeed have a mind that is still going to reflexively respond out of its ignorance by generating desire and aversion, different aspects of craving, if you can hold an awareness that to the degree that you're able to refrain from acting out of those and setting those aside. And what would be the opposite of greed, desire? Be generosity, right? Mm-hmm. Love. You know, real love, not the kind that is giving something and expecting something in return. The genuine love, genuine generosity, compassion. What is the opposite of hatred, of aversion?
Equanimity.
What's that?
Equanimity.
Equanimity isn't its opposite. No, equanimity is what will allow you to not react with hatred. But the opposite of hatred is, once again, it's patience, understanding, and it's love and it's compassion. These are the opposites. So the idea here is that you can begin the process of using this information and transforming your own life if you adopt the practice of trying to refrain from acting to whatever degree you can. Try to refrain from acting out of desire and aversion, from speaking out of desire and aversion, and of allowing your mind to continue spinning thoughts based in desire and aversion, and then to whatever degree you can, and it is something that you will become better at over time, in that moment trying to make the shift away from the negative ways of thinking and feeling to the corresponding positive ways of thinking and feeling that can be applied in the same instant. So that's how you begin the process. And there are precepts and what I call the practice of perfections that are tools that you use to do that. A precept of refraining from causing harm to other beings. If you hold that in your mind, when you begin to do or say something that's going to hurt somebody else, then, and this of course assumes that you have sufficient mindful awareness to be able to remember this at the time, right? But if you have the mindful awareness, then you can not only refrain from acting, but you can take some steps towards modifying the thought processes that lie behind the potential action. The same thing with all the other precepts, to refrain from any kind of wrong speech, false speech, harsh speech, divisive speech, sexual misconduct, stealing or exploiting others in any way. These become guidelines for you to use in your application of mindfulness, of mindful awareness. Yeah.
I'm trying to get a grip on how you deal with it when you find out after the fact that you hurt somebody and you didn't even know you had. There was a case where it was being Christmas, and there was this tree that was all lit up. It was a beautiful tree. And I was standing there admiring it, and one of the other neighbors came and said, "Wow, that's a really beautiful tree, but it's kind of late. I mean, shouldn't they have taken these decorations down by now?" And I said, "Yeah, well, but the guy who owns that tree, this was his last Christmas. He isn't here anymore. And he wanted to see it, you know, as the thing." And, you know, I at first thought I was only explaining, "Why are these up so late?" And she stood there and I heard her say, "Oh." And I realized I could have punched her and done less harm. And I felt horrible.
But it wasn't your intention to hurt her.
No, it wasn't. But now I'm standing around going, "Wow, how do you even see that coming?"
Well, I mean, a lot of things happen that you can't see coming. And there are accidents.
And I mean, is there any way I could have been more gentle with this human?
Well, there might have been. Without going into the individual circumstances, which we don't need to do.
Right.
It is possible. That would be called skillful means. The degree to which you can cultivate the combination of mindful awareness with a deeper understanding, a greater wisdom, then you can recognize opportunities to speak and act in a way that is going to be more beneficial and effective. But the point is, in terms of this discussion, is what's important is what goes on in your mind in terms of creating the person that you're going to be. Mm-hmm. You see, if you do something with the intention of harming somebody,
right,
you've conditioned yourself in a particular way. And it has a lot of ramifications. It will determine how you see other people. You know, there's a, I can't remember, something about, you know, thieves never trust anybody.
Oh,
yeah. That's not exactly how it goes. But it's the idea. If you're a thief, you expect everybody's going to steal from you, right? And so this is just a little example, but the idea is that you become a kind of person who has certain kinds of expectations, sees people and circumstances in a particular way, and of course does things out of that, which is going to produce consequences.
So now I get to wander around feeling a little bit of fear about saying the right thing, and I watched myself become just a little bit more...
Well, it sounds like it may have had a positive conditioning effect, because if you saw that you caused harm to somebody, but you didn't intend to, and you experienced sincere regret. Regret is a very, very powerful thing when applied appropriately.
So it's not fear?
Well, might have been if it was fear.
No, I mean
your past conditioning might have caused you to respond to that experience with fear, which will only reinforce the fear. But it might have caused you to respond with regret, which will only make you more careful in the future, more desirous of not doing those kinds of things.
Okay. So we just head in the direction of the wholesome precepts, trying to engage with compassion and just keep coming back to take our word for it, this is the way.
Yeah.
I would think this would be a very good example of what you're saying of our conditioning dictating our response. Mm-hmm. And if we are mindful, then you really choose, if I can understand this correctly, we're choosing the responses we have in every moment.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so our past conditioning trains us to choose usually the same sort of response. And this is where the mindful awareness comes in, is we stop and say, another opportunity for choice. Mm-hmm. Where do I want to go with this? How do I want to choose? What do I want to think or feel? Is that mm-hmm. so? And then we start emphasizing that, and it becomes, we lift it up in a way. I mean, that's. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it has, it happens in at all kinds of levels. It's as simple as if you're tempted to do something, you recognize that it's unwholesome and you refrain from doing it. It's going to be easier not to do it next time. And if you repeat that, you'll actually become less tempted to ever do it. Every single action and every single moment bears an imprint. And it's either going to reinforce what's already there or negate something that's there. Yes?
One thing that I know that, like the monks and nuns, what they do after they've spent a lot of time together is they do a forgiveness ritual that was taught by the Buddha, actually. And so you don't have to be a monk or a nun or spend a lot of time, but there's a whole process. It's very simple, really. But you can utilize it in your life, day to day. Like, you could, once you learn this little process, which is just, the formal words go something like this: if I have done anything through body, speech, or mind that has harmed you in any way, I ask you to forgive me. And, you know, it's a little bit ponderous for a neighbor, but, you know, you could just put it like, you know, if I offended you, please forgive me. And then drop it, you know. And I use it for myself all the time. I say, you know, have I done anything? Yeah. Can I forgive myself? Yeah. So, there you go. It's very, very skillful. It's very useful. And it's a good practice.
Yes, it is. One of the things that people, one of the negative karmas that people carry around is guilt for things that they've done in the past that they can't undo and they can't change. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you become aware that you are afflicted with that in some way, if it is at all possible to ask a person for forgiveness, or even better, to do something to make some kind of restitution for what you've done, you will cleanse yourself. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, we know that. That's common sense. Mm-hmm. Right? But it's a really powerful thing that we can do. But what if that person is not accessible? You don't even know where they are anymore. Maybe they're dead. And you carry around this guilt or some other negative feeling that makes you a person that is more difficult to experience happiness and more likely to experience suffering. You can still ask for forgiveness even if you can't find the person. If you can generate in yourself a sincere regret for what you did, you can forgive yourself on behalf of the other person. That's essentially what happens. And it's one of the things that we need to do. There's a little process called the Four Powers, which is a way of dealing with your bad karma. And it involves regret, and then it involves it involves doing anything that you can to make what you did right, if it's possible to do that. It involves a deep resolve that you are going to do your best not to do anything like that again. And actually, that resolve can include you're going to do your best to make yourself into the kind of being who would never do something like that again. And then the fourth of the powers is to take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. But this, from a strictly psychological point of view, this is a very powerful mechanism. You've done something that you regret doing. You can't go back in time and undo it. It's left its imprint on you. It's left its thing. It's going to produce consequences. And so what can you do to undo its negative influence on yourself? Sincerely regret what you did. And sincerely is really important. It's not quite like Catholics going to confession. Although that's supposed to be, you know, sincere too. But and if it is sincere for Catholics going to confession, it's going to work for them too. If they believe that they have been forgiven and absolved, it's going to actually work in exactly the same way. But if you regret it, if you do anything you can to make amends, and if you resolve not only not to do anything like that again, but also to take appropriate actions to make yourself into a kind of person that's not going to do things like that again, it'll work.
Mm-hmm. I have a kind of a superstition. I've kind of always wondered about it. It floats around on the back of that will be born again thing. And it's, okay, so I had a very, very wicked thought. I held it for a very long time. I finally got over it. I'm sincerely regretful. I've done everything I can to change and make amends. Mm-hmm. But that poisonous thought from years ago is still out there. And I wonder if it's gonna, you know, does that stuff linger? Mm-hmm. there's no way to open a window on the universe and fan.
That's true, and that's true. You know, actions have consequences in the world, and you can't change those consequences.
So
no matter, you know, somebody who has committed some grievous act in the past, no matter how much they regret and repent and might do something to atone for it, if it's against the law and somebody else finds out about it, they'll be tried and they'll be punished. It comes back at them. Mm-hmm. Right? Or there's all of the other ways. I mean, you throw rocks in the air, one of them can come down and hit you in the head.
So I guess my superstition is that gravity lasts forever.
Well, why call it a superstition? What?
Because I don't know.
What modern Western science tells us is absolutely everything is causally interconnected, and so any action at any place in space and time has consequences that will reverberate throughout space and time to the ends of the universe and to the end of time. So in that regard, it's not a superstition.
So when the rock comes down and hits me, I just take my lumps.
Well, exactly. You take your lumps. Because you see, what we're talking about here is not manipulating the way the world works, trying to control what happens to us. What we're talking about is taking steps to change who it happens to.
Well, by the time I've become all better now, then in the next lifetime I'll go, hey, what did I do for this?
Well, you know, your next lifetime, when you wake up tomorrow morning,
exactly,
it will be the beginning of a new lifetime, right? You'll mm-hmm. be a different person than you are today. And the same thing the day after, and the day after, and the day after. So, if you commit an act of any kind, including one that isn't externally manifested, this is also true of a completely internal act, it is going to... The karmic consequence is that the person that's reborn when you wake up tomorrow morning and subsequent mornings is going to be conditioned by that act. Okay?
But you have just said that following these tendencies to teach ourselves more compassion and more wisdom mm-hmm. will unknot that conditioning.
But you want to change the conditioning. What you do today is going to determine the person who's reborn tomorrow.
Right.
Okay, so if you do good things today, so then the person who's reborn tomorrow is going to be conditioned.
Will be less conditioned by that other part.
That's right.
Can you get that out?
The Can you what?
Can you completely uncondition and be entirely something else?
Recondition. Well,
recondition, thank you. Oh, good one.
No. Well, I think you can be mindful awareness.
What's that?
She's back to mindful awareness. She has to choose each time.
You have to choose each time. But there is proposed to be an end of the goal, which is where you become a Buddha, which means that at that point, you are beyond all of that conditioning. And you are your happiness, and as a matter of fact, nothing about your is no longer dependent upon external circumstances. So there may be things that happen to you, but whether you're a Buddha or whether you're just a little bit better off than where you are today, what you can be is a person. The person to whom that happens is somebody who will not suffer so much as a result of it. May not suffer at all. That's the potential, is to not suffer at all as a result of it. But short of that, you don't need to suffer as much because of it. Does that make sense to you?
It does. Yeah. Short form, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I worked with people in prison for a while, and some of them had done some pretty nasty things. Not individual acts, some of them had lived really nasty lives. But I observed them in the prison. They're interested in meditation, spirituality, reading. Some of them were never going to leave. At least there was no hope in sight for them ever to leave. But they had become a person who was not suffering as a result. They had accepted that this is where their life was, and they were making the absolute best of it. And they, you know, you weren't looking at a person who was suffering as a consequence of what was being done to them. Because they had changed the person that they were. They were not the same person that they had been that did the things that caused them to be in a maximum security unit in a prison in Southeast Arizona. They just weren't that person anymore. They were a person who was in a maximum security unit in a prison in Southeast Arizona, which means that they were surrounded by a lot of really hardcore, heavy individuals. And I'm sure the life in that prison is as rough as what we hear about in other prisons everywhere. You know, there's a lot of violence, a lot of cruelty, a lot of terrible things that go on, not just amongst prisoners, but very often the staff is involved in that as well. But I've seen men that were able to live in that circumstance and probably be more at peace than most of the people that we see out on the streets. So that's what I mean. You can become a person who reacts differently to the things that happen to you, even though the things that happen to you may be the direct consequences fed back from the world to you. So the rock may come down and hit your head, but you may be a person who can take your lumps with a smile on your face.
I have a more specific question, and it's related to the to write speech, to writing. I'm sometimes presented with a situation where I judge it to be best to write.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what I see myself doing more and more is to try to, instead of outright lying, skirting the issue and going around it, to not have to articulate the lie.
Yeah.
And it's It's troublesome for me to do that.
Mm-hmm. Troublesome in the sense of being difficult?
Well, it's troublesome to go around it and know that I'm going around it, mm-hmm. and that essentially I'm finding another way to lie that is more palatable. Uh-huh. What are your thoughts on this? Mm-hmm.
Well, the important thing is that you're aware of it at the time. You're trying not to engage in false speech, and you're doing the best that you can in the moment to refrain from engaging in false speech. And over time, you'll probably find more skillful ways to do that. But, you know, the precept is not... The precept is a tool to use for training, and so you're using it. And right now you're at the stage of finding ways to go around it. But, you know, what the Buddha said about this is if he couldn't say something that was true and that was helpful, he wouldn't say anything at all.
But sometimes you can't not say anything.
Sometimes you can. You might say, okay, well, the Buddha had more freedom than I do. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, I suppose some situation could have arisen where some king took hold of him and had an executioner with a sword to his throat and said, okay, you know, tell me this or tell me not. What would the Buddha have done? Would not speaking would have meant he would have allowed the king to order his head cut off? I don't know. But the point is that in terms of the guidance that we have available to us from the teachings of the Buddha, one way in which to keep that precept is to refrain from saying anything. And you say that that's sort of what you're doing, although it still feels, there may be still an element of dishonesty that you sense in that.
Yeah. Manipulation. Yeah.
But that's good. You think about that, and you work with that as best you can. And
you can always use the Irish method, and when somebody asks you a question and you can't tell them the truth, you ask them a question like that.
That's right. The skillful means is figuring out ways to deal with the situation in the most wholesome way that you can. And we can only guess what the Buddha would do, but a good question to have in mind is what would Buddha do? If the Buddha were in your situation and had to deal with this, what would he do?
Yeah. Well, I thought that he was, from time to time, he did choose to lie, and he called it skillful means because it was for the greater good in those certain situations. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, someone was chasing someone, and the first guy went by, and then the chaser came by and said, which way did he go? That's exactly what happened.
My best number ever.
So he lied.
Yes, that's true.
It was for the better.
Yeah.
That's all that skillful means. Yeah. Right?
So you might get to the point where you're all right with doing that. That's just an important point. Precepts aren't about an absolutely right or wrong way to deal with the situation. Precepts are about bringing you to a state of mindful awareness where you act as skillfully as you possibly can in the moment. And you will make mistakes, but you will get better at it if you keep doing it. And that's the important point. And in terms of what we're talking about, every time you do that, you are molding and shaping yourself into a nobler sort of person. Yes, it's 8:30, so yes, some people may need to go. Well, maybe that's the note on which we should leave. Or is there anybody that has a final question that's really pressing that they'd like to ask?
Well, I just had a related thought that I just thought occurred to me that that compassion a lot of times involves telling somebody the truth in a difficult way, because you might think that you're being more, you know, kinder to lie, but actually it's more compassionate to tell the truth. So I just had this thought myself about how you can do a lot of harm by trying to be kind and telling a lie to make someone feel better.
Yeah, that's right. There is tough love. And the Buddha said he wouldn't say something if it wasn't true and it wasn't beneficial. And this is an example of something that would be beneficial. So, so if it's true and it's beneficial, and it's, then you say it. You don't, rather than trying to protect a person's feelings in the moment, if you're going to produce a much better effect. Doing so.
And what is truth anyway? I mean, you, at least to say it's true to, for me is an act of compassion to somebody else. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not saying it's true to them or true in some, you know.
Well, now that's a good point, yes. We all have our own personal truths. And, it's, and if we sincerely care about having true communication and real understanding with other people, then we have to be able to speak our truths, which doesn't, and to recognize that it may not be their truth, it may not be somebody else's. Anybody else have to leave right now?
Well, I don't want to start a discussion just like that.
Anybody has to leave, go ahead, right now. I'm not going to go on for very much longer, so we got 5 minutes while I answer another question.
Last week you talked a little bit about, like you said earlier, making choices, and also how intention is a kind of an illusion, but yet everything, you know, even the precepts and everything we do is kind of with an intention of doing good, doing benefiting everyone. And so in terms of, you even mentioned how at some point compassion becomes not this emotional response, but just a given, a, you know, the only choice that you have.
Yeah.
And in that case, one of the things I was thinking about leaving was, how do you make decisions, how do you make choices? Because, you know, if you wanted to help every person that needed help, it would be impossible to... Mm-hmm. do so in every second, and then also combining this with all the ideas of no self and not identifying yourself with your mind, then I started getting confused about how do you make decisions, you know, how do you flow with action.
But that's a very good topic. Actually, it passed through my mind as I was talking earlier. Yes, to begin with, you have this experience of being the one making decisions. The most important thing that you do is to make the decision to practice the mindful awareness that puts you in a position where there are choices. But the fact is that there are always choices, even though there isn't the kind of self that you imagine there to be. The psychophysical entity that you are is always making choices. And what you can do is you can influence how that psychophysical entity is going to make its choices in the future. You can, by the kind of experience and wisdom that is accumulated over time. In the immediate present, you make that psychophysical, you give that psychophysical entity that you call yourself an opportunity to make wiser choices by allowing more of what you are to participate, be present, be involved in the circumstances of each moment. I talked to you before about how often you'll do things and then afterwards you really regret it and you know better. And that's because the part of your mind that knew better and that would have made a different decision wasn't at the table when the decision was made. But part of what mindful awareness does is allows a more complete presence of all of the different facets of who you are. Because some of our worst decisions are made when most of the decision making board is away on vacation. And so having mindful awareness in the moment has the effect of essentially putting out a notice to other parts of yourself, other aspects of your mind, bringing them into an involvement in the decision-making process and increasing the likelihood that the decision, that the choice that's going to be made is a wise one. And none of that's incompatible with the idea that there is no self who's making these choices.
And I recognize that karma is a big part of this, and that which is a subject also that is huge and way beyond my understanding, really. And maybe at some point we'll have a chance to discuss in this group at some point.
No reason we can't discuss it next Thursday if somebody brings it up. Okay? So I think that's enough for tonight. So thank you for staying a little bit longer.
Thank you
for coming. It was a very enjoyable discussion.